These forces are not as strong as those in solid manure or liquid manure, but in a certain sense, they are more stable. The astrality in particular is more stable. It is simply a matter of allowing for this stability in the right way. If the etheric life in a compost pile is too rampant, the ability of the astrality to influence the nitrogen is completely impaired. The astrality is prevented from coming into its own, so to speak. There is a particular substance, however, namely lime, whose favorable influence in the natural world I have already described from several different points of view. If you add some lime to the compost pile, and perhaps in the form of quicklime, a remarkable thing happens. Without causing the astrality to volatilize too strongly, the quicklime takes up the etheric, and with it also the oxygen, so that the astrality becomes effective in a wonderful way. This accomplishes something very specific. When you use this compost as fertilizer, you will be giving the soil's earthly component something that strongly permeates it with astrality, without the detour of the etheric. Just picture it. The astrality penetrates very strongly into the earthly component of the soil, without first going by way of the etheric, so that the soil becomes strongly astralized and, by means of what is astralized, becomes permeated with nitrogenous substance. What arises there is really very similar to a certain plant-like process in the human organism, a plant-like process that is not concerned with reaching the fruiting stage, but which is content to remain, as it were, at the stage of leaf and stem formation. The process we impart to the soil must also exist in us, so that in a corresponding way we can bring our food to the necessary energetic state that I mentioned earlier. When we treat the soil in the way I have described, we stimulate it to the same energetic state, and this prepares the soil to bring forth something that is especially good for animals to consume, so that under its influence they can develop inner liveliness, so that their bodies can become inwardly energetic. In other words, we would do well to fertilize our pastures and meadows with this compost. If we do this conscientiously, that is, if we also carry out the other procedures that are necessary, we will end up with good pasturage, which even when it is cut will make good hay. I would like to say, however, that in order to proceed in the right way with things like this, we need to have insight into the whole matter. What we do in particular instances will naturally depend on our feeling, but this feeling develops itself once we have proper insight into the whole nature of the process. Now, if you simply leave a compost pile lying around, as I have described it so far, it can very easily begin to scatter its astrality. It is at this point that the personal relationship you develop to these things becomes important, because you need to do whatever you can to make the pile smell as little as possible. This can be easily accomplished if you build up the pile in thin layers and cover each layer with something like loose peat before adding the next one. This holds together what would otherwise escape in the form of odors. That is to say, the nitrogen, which wants to escape in all kinds of guises and combinations. The main thing I want to indicate here is that we must approach everything in farming with the conviction that in order for the whole thing to work, we need to pour life and also astrality into everything around us. Now, if we continue from here, something else may occur to you. Have you ever thought about why cows have horns, but certain other animals have antlers? That's an extremely important question. However, what science has to offer on this point is usually very one-sided and superficial. Let us try to answer this question of why cows have horns. Remember that I said that something living need not have forces that only stream outward, it can also have forces that stream inward. Imagine here some organic entity with streams of force going in both directions. There's the drawing with arrows pointing in and out. If that were all there was to it, we would have a rather irregular, lumpy creature. A cow would look very peculiar. Its limbs would stay tiny, the way they are in the earliest embryonic stages. It would simply look grotesque. But that's not how a cow is put together. A cow has horns and also hooves. What happens at the places where the horns and hooves grow? At these places, the streams are especially strongly turned back inward, and the outside is particularly strongly shut off. All outward communication, such as can occur through skin or hair, is completely ruled out. In this way, the development of the horns and hooves is connected to the form and the development of the animal as a whole. Antler formation is something totally different. In the case of antlers, the streams are not directed back into the organism. Instead, the antlers serve as outlets so that certain streams can be led outward for a ways and discharged there. By the way, streams don't always have to be fluid or gaseous. They can also be streams of force, which in this case are localized in the antlers. A stag is beautiful because it stands in intense communication with its surroundings, because it directs some of its force streams outward and lives at one with its environment, and thereby takes in everything that influences the nerves and senses on an organic level. A stag thus becomes a quick and nervous animal. In a certain respect, all animals with antlers are suffused with a slight nervousness, which can already be seen in their eyes. A cow has horns in order to send the formative astral etheric forces back into its digestive system, so that much work can be accomplished there by means of these radiations from the horns and hooves. Anyone trying to understand foot and mouth disease, that is how the periphery of the animal works back on the digestive tract, needs to understand this relationship. Our remedy for foot and mouth disease is based on insight into this relationship. So you see, there is something inherent in a horn that makes it well suited for reflecting living and astral influences back into the activity of the interior. In a horn, you have something that can radiate life and even astrality. It is truly so. If you could crawl around inside the living body of a cow, if you were right inside the cow's belly, you would be able to smell how living astrality streams inward from the horns. And with the hooves, it is similar. This all points to measures we might introduce to enhance the effectiveness of ordinary barn manure. What is this manure in reality? It is outer nourishment that has entered into the animal, that has been absorbed to some extent and given occasion for the dynamic development of forces within the organism, but which has then been excreted, rather than serving primarily to enrich the animal with substance. In passing through the organism, however, it has become pervaded with astral and etheric activity. It has become permeated with nitrogen-bearing forces and oxygen-bearing forces. The mass that emerges as manure is impregnated with all of this. Now, suppose we take this mass in some form or other, and we'll go into details later, and give it over to the earth. What would we actually be doing is we would be putting something etheric and astral into the earth, something that by rights belongs in the belly of an animal, and in the belly produces plant-like forces. Indeed, the forces that are engendered in our digestive tract are plant-like. We ought actually to be terribly grateful that there is anything left over as manure, because in this way, something etheric and astral is carried from inside the organs out into the open. These etheric and astral forces are inherent in the manure. All we have to do is preserve them so that they can have an enlivening and astralizing effect on the soil. And not only on the watery part of the soil, but also on the earthly mineral component. Manure has sufficient force to overcome even the inorganic earthly element. Now, what we put into the ground, of course, must lose the form it originally had before it was consumed as fodder. It must have gone through an internal organic process in the animal's metabolic system. To a certain extent, it will already have begun to decay and dissolve, but it is best if it has just reached the point where it's beginning to fall apart by virtue of its own etheric and astral forces. Then, microscopic parasites, the smallest living creatures, put in an appearance and find a fertile breeding ground in the manure. This is why people think these parasitic beings have something to do with the manure's quality. In actuality, however, they are only a sign that the manure is already in a certain condition. They can be useful as indicators, but we are succumbing to an illusion if we think we can radically improve manure by inoculating it with bacteria and so on. It might initially appear to do so, but in reality, it's not the case. I will return to this later. Meanwhile, let's continue. Next, let us take the manure in whatever form is available, stuff it into a cow horn, and bury it in the ground at a certain depth, I would say between 3/4 and 1.5 meters, so that's 2.5 to 5 feet. Provided the soil beneath is neither too clayish nor too sandy. We should select a good soil that's not too sandy. You see, by burying the cow horn with the manure in it, we preserve in the horn the etheric and astral forces that the horn was accustomed to reflect when it was on the cow. Because the cow horn is now outwardly surrounded by the earth, all the earth's etherizing and astralizing rays stream into its inner cavity. The manure inside the horn attracts these forces and is inwardly enlivened by them. If the horn is buried for the entire winter, the season when the earth is most inwardly alive, all this life will be preserved in the manure, turning the contents of the horn into an extremely concentrated, enlivening and fertilizing force. Once the winter is over, we can dig up the cow horn and take the manure out of it. During our last experiments in Dornoch, people discovered that when we took the manure out, it did not stink at all anymore. This was very striking. It had no smell anymore, although, of course, it did begin to smell a little as we mixed it with water. This shows how all the smell in it had been concentrated and transformed. After spending the winter underground, the cow horn contains an immense astral and etheric energy, which you can now use by diluting the contents with ordinary water, which should perhaps be warmed up a bit. I have always found, inasmuch as I first looked at the area to be treated to get an impression of the quantities, that for an area as large as, say, from the third window here to the first footpath, that this needs only one hornful of manure diluted in about half a bucket of water. You must make sure, however, that the entire contents of the horn have been thoroughly exposed to the water. To do this, you have to start stirring it quickly around the edge of the bucket, on the periphery, until a crater forms that reaches nearly to the bottom, so that everything is rotating rapidly. Then you reverse the direction quickly so that everything seethes and starts to swirl in the opposite direction. If you continue doing this for an hour, you will get it thoroughly mixed. Just imagine how little work this takes. The burden of labor for these things will not be very great. Besides, I could imagine that otherwise unoccupied members of a farming household might really enjoy stirring the manure, at least for a while. The sons and daughters of the household could do an excellent job of it. It is a very pleasant feeling to experience how a delicate odor develops out of what was initially odorless. The personal relationship that you can develop to such things is extremely beneficial for people who wish to experience nature as a whole and not just as it appears in Baedeker guidebooks. The next thing to do is to spray the substance over your plowed field so that you can really unite it with the soil. When only small areas are involved, you can apply it with an ordinary syringe sprayer, but of course for larger areas, special machines will be constructed. If you manage to supplement your usual manuring with this kind of spiritual manure, you will soon see what fertility will result. In particular, you will find that these things lend themselves to further development in a most remarkable way. Thus, you can follow up the measure I've just explained with another one, which can be as follows. Once again, take cow horns, but this time, instead of stuffing them with manure, fill them with quartz that has been ground to a powder and mixed with water to the consistency of a very thin dough. Instead of quartz, you could also use orthoclase or feldspar. And now, instead of leaving the cow horn in the ground through the winter, let it stay underground all summer and then take it out in late autumn. Save the contents until the next spring and then take what was exposed to the summer life of the earth and treat it just as you did the manure. In this case, however, you will need much smaller quantities. You can take a portion the size of a pea, or maybe no bigger than a pinhead, and stir it into a whole bucket of water. This, too, needs to be stirred for an hour. If you apply this as fine spray on the plants themselves, especially on vegetables and things like that, you will soon notice how its effect complements and supports the influence coming from the other side, from the soil, as a result of the cowhorn manure. And if you were also to extend this treatment to entire fields, it shouldn't be too difficult to construct machines that would apply the very light spraying we need. You would then see how the cowhorn manure pushes from below and how the other stuff pulls from above, neither too strongly nor too gently. It could be wonderfully effective, especially in the case of grain. You see, these things are derived from a wider field of observation and not just from dealing with a single thing in question, which is like trying to reconstruct a whole human being from a single finger. Something is attained thereby which is definitely not to be underestimated. The studies that are made nowadays, studies on farm productivity and the like, are really nothing more than studies on how to make production as profitable as possible. They don't amount to much more than that. Of course, even farmers are impressed, although they aren't always conscious of this, when some measure or other achieves big results, huge potatoes, for example, or anything else big and swollen. But then the investigation is not taken any further, even though these things are not the most important aspects at all. The most important thing is that once these things reach human beings, their effect on human life should be as beneficial and health-giving as possible. You can raise fruits that look magnificent in the orchard or field, but as far as human beings are concerned, they may simply be stomach filler and not promote human life. But today's science is unable to pursue things to the point where people would be getting the best kind of nourishment. It simply does not know how to go about it. In contrast, what spiritual science has to say on the subject is rooted in the whole household of nature. It is always conceived out of the totality, and for this reason, the individual measures are also decisive for the totality. If we farm like this, the result can be nothing other than what is best for human beings and also for animals. In spiritual science, human beings are our standard and our starting point. All our practical suggestions serve the purpose of sustaining the whole human being in the best way possible. That is what distinguishes this kind of study and research from what is customary today. Thank you.